Let's Talk with Anna Glavinsky.
And now we're talking to author Mike Adcock all about making music out of stones. Hello, Mike. How are you doing this morning?
All right. Can you hear me?
Yeah, got you loud and clear. How are you doing this morning?
All right, thank you. Yes.
Yeah, fantastic. My first question is, are there any sort of songs that many people would know and recognise that have used stones in the making of the sound of them?
I'm afraid probably not. but there is a band called Sigur Rós.
Okay.
From Iceland, who have been quite a popular sort of indie band over the last few years. And they use stones. And there's a, in one of their videos, it shows them collecting stones off of one of the hills in Iceland and the rocks and the mountains. But it's no, there hasn't really been a number one hit using stones, as far as I know.
Well, maybe we can try and make that happen, because, I mean, making music out of stones certainly has its history. It might not be the most commonplace way of making music these days, but it does have its history.
It does, and it goes back a long time as well. They've probably thousands of years, they think.
That, wow.
And it's not any stone, because it has to be stone. Some stone will ring with a nice sound, like a bell, when you strike it. Where I live in England, in the in Gloucestershire, it's the Cotswolds. The stone just sounds very dead. So, but there are some stone which will ring. I make instruments from roof slate, and roof slate sometimes rings very nicely, and you can tune it. And so I make like a little xylophone out of roof slates.
That's completely, it just sounds so improbable. How did you stumble across this world of making music from roof slates, like you say, and other sorts of rocks?
Well, it was a long time ago now. It was about 20 years ago. And two things happened. One, because I'm a musician myself, and I've made my living through music. And I was playing in a piece in London written by an English composer called Cornelius Cardew. And he requested people to strike some stones. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I still hear you.
Oh, you just lost the picture. Okay. And he asked me, the person who was directing it, to strike these pebbles together. And I said, yeah, that's fine. And then just a few weeks later, I was touring with a band, some Norwegian musicians, and the percussionist, who incidentally makes instruments out of ice now. But he brought some granite over with him from Norway, and he played that. And so I started getting interested in this whole idea of stone to make music. And then I discovered that up in Keswick in the Lake District, there was a whole history of it going back to 17-something, when somebody made an instrument out of stones. And then after that, there were these family bands, and they were incredibly successful. And I didn't know anything about it. And there's one family band called the Richardsons, who I think they worked out they did about 1,200 gigs in about a 12-year period, traveling around all over the country and in Europe as well. And they played at Buckingham Palace for Queen Victoria and Prince Albert. So it's a much bigger thing than we might think it was.
Yeah. Well, they sound like they were basically a number one hit band before the Top of the Pops ever even existed.
Yeah, and the wonderful thing is they called themselves the original rock band. And that was in 1840. So
that shouldn't have tickled me as much as it did, but I love that.
Well, it's great, isn't it? Yeah, and of course, everybody, if I tell people I'm interested, they always say, oh, that was the original rock music, or were that the original Rolling Stones or something like that.
You know? Yeah, oh, I'm annoyed I didn't think of that myself. It's such an obvious one. And I mean, I don't know if you have a stone instrument right there to hand that you could show us what it actually sounds like, or if not, just sort of describe to us in words, what sort of sounds can rocks make?
Yeah, I should have had one to hand, shouldn't I? But it sounds, they vary. I think, you know, if you make an instrument out of stone, it sort of sounds somewhere between the sound of a xylophone, which is wood, something like a glockenspiel, or, you know, vibe, which is metal. And the name for stone instruments is a lithophone, And because litho is stone, like a lithograph is using stone, and a xylophone, xylo is means wood. So it just means, so it sounds sort of in between. It's not as metallic as a glockenspiel, and it's, but it's a bit more brittle sounding than wood. And but it depends what type of stone it is as well.
Oh, really? So you can make different types of sort of sounds and instruments from different types of stones. I guess that should be obvious, yeah. But...
Yeah. So there was one guy in the 19th century, a Frenchman, who collected flint. And flint sounds really lovely. And the stone that they used up in the Lake District was called hornfels. It was just from near Keswick. And there's a type of slate that was sort of volcanic, so it's very hard. And that sounds very, you know, very nice. Or you can use granite, some types of limestone. So there are different types of stone, but it just has to have that quality of ringing. And even with a slate, you don't know whether it's going to ring or not. I first started making mine. It was a whole load of slates that had been removed from a roof, a little cottage in Stroud where I live.
Yeah.
And I sat down one sunny afternoon just going through these pieces of slate. And some pieces rang beautifully, other ones just sounded dead. And so you never really know. It all depends on the structure inside the stone, really. Yeah.
And do you think that's, you know, the lack of control that you have over it, over the sound of making it sort of the same every time, might be one of the reasons why it hasn't become such a mainstream way of making music? Or would you say there's other reasons why it perhaps hasn't carried on with so much popularity?
I think it might be something to do with that. But it's, but once you make an instrument out of it, it's no more difficult to play than a, I'm not saying that a xylophone is easy, but I mean, to get a sound out of it, it's just the same, really. And there was my book, the foreword has been written by Dame Evelyn Glennie, who's a lot of people know as a top British, well, a wonderful percussionist. And she loves the sound of a lithophone, and they do make professional instruments out of it, and she plays one. So it's no different really from any other percussion, you know, tuned percussion instrument. It's just that they're not popular. I mean, originally, they were a bit impractical because apart from slate, I mean, if you're using big slabs of stone, it's not very practical to carry it around, you know. It's so that's one reason why there aren't many rock bands that use rock, we could say.
Yeah, of course, that makes sense, especially if you wanted to start traveling around. But they do, you know, they might not be the most commonplace, but they do have their history. I see here that some lithophones were discovered in Vietnam, and right, they're very, very, very ancient.
They are, yeah, and that's one of the first things that I got interested in. And I've been to Vietnam a couple of times, and they found some slabs there that they think were tuned, and because they can see the chisel marks on them, so they were tuned, and they go back, yeah, maybe 2,000-3,000 years, maybe longer. And so it's quite likely that in ancient times people were using stone partly for music, but also as to communicate as well. And they were probably using wood as well, but of course that's all perished, so we're only left with these lumps of stone.
Sorry, carry on.
But what I've written about is in the book is more slightly more modern period, sort of from the 1700s onwards. But there's a whole other story to be told, you know, from all the stuff that's that goes back thousands of years.
Yeah, absolutely. Maybe that'll be your next book. So talking of the sort of more modern, in inverted commas, of music stones, who else was there? And what are some of the other stories that, you know, people are unlikely to know about this time in history, this time in musical history?
Well, I mean, it's there. I mean, in Britain, certainly it's there to find out. And in Keswick, they've still got an instrument there, which is a 5-octave instrument. It takes up almost one side of one of the galleries there. And so you can go and see it and you can play it. But in different parts of the world and different parts of Europe, in France, I mentioned this French guy. And there's also in Spain, there was somebody in Menorca who made one of these instruments. And I've written about him in the book as well. And he was, well, he came from a family of doctors, but he was, I think, he'd been left some money. And so he didn't want to become a doctor. And so he spent his time doing other things, taking photographs. And he made this instrument out of stone and played one concert on a beach in Menorca to about 1,200 people. Wow. And then got a medal from somebody in Italy, in Naples. But then I don't think it was ever played again.
Oh.
So, I mean, there's a whole lot of different stories. And in America as well, people... I've found a lot of stuff just through newspaper archives. People a bit more recently in the sort of 1950s, 1960s, who started making them. And there are now people different all around the world who are making instruments from stone. And I've got them to contribute to my book as well. So people in America, Canada, Slovenia, Norway, Vietnam, got somebody. Yeah, so... It is across the world.
Wow. Yes, people are discovering this sound globally. But you also link, it's not just about making music, sort of music per se. You also link some of the sounds of stones with some sculptures of our time. Barbara Hepworth, for example, extremely famous. Yeah. Extremely famous carver.
Well, I knew that there were some sculptors. There was somebody in Italy called Pinuccio Sciola, who was established and is quite a renowned sculptor. And it was only sort of later in his career that he started using the sound of stone. And so he made these sound sculptures. But only since writing the book, I found that Barbara Hepworth, although she didn't make sound sculptures, she was very interested in the sound of stone. Because when you're carving stone, obviously it's making a sound. Hmm. And you can tell by the sound something about the stone and about the way you're working. And then I found out that there was a composer who was a friend of hers who apparently one day went in Barbara Hepworth's studio in St. Ives, and this composer called Prio Renier, she sat down, and as Barbara Hepworth was making a sculpture and carving the stone, she wrote down all the rhythms and then wrote a piece of music based on that. So there's that connection with sculpture, which I really like, yeah.
My goodness, it's a whole sort of world, you know, this sort of small little world, but actually it's really quite vast. That, you know,
it is, yeah.
Yeah, incredible. Your book, it's called Music Stones. What's it, you know, how's it written? What kind of book is it? Who's it for?
Well, yeah, that's a good question. I think the publisher, who called Archaeopress, their background is writing academic books on archaeology, actually. So in one way, because it's the first book, the first comprehensive book that's been written about musical stone. So so in one way, it's not an academic book, but I mean, it's got, you know, I've researched it. But I like to think that it's the way I've written it isn't just as an academic book, because for me, what it's become about in a way is not just the stone, but all these people who became interested in it and whose lives were changed by it. So in a way, it's a story of people as well, and just quite ordinary people who just discovered that stone rang and they thought, oh, I could make an instrument out of it. And often you find when I was reading about it, people think they were the first person to ever think of it, you know. So I think it's a human story. It's not just an academic musical book. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Lots of pictures as well.
Oh, it's a picture book.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, about 120 pictures, colour pictures. And cause they're quite visual as well. They are lumps of stone, but they're arranged in a very beautiful way.
Yeah, something to look at. And I mean, that's the way you're sort of looking at it and reading about it. What if somebody who's never heard what stones can sound like? Is there anywhere on YouTube or Spotify that people can listen? That you could recommend?
Definitely. Well, I mean, if you go on YouTube, as I say, the word for a stone instrument is a lithophone. And so if you just put it, you know, you just do a search on YouTube and you'll come up with all sorts of things. There's actually a thing of me playing, it's about 10 years ago now, but I decided to start a roof slate ensemble. So we're up on YouTube. And at the book launch in a couple of weeks' time, I've got some people together and we're all going to play playing tunes. They're all tuned slates. So we're going to play some tunes on roof slates.
That sounds absolutely fantastic. If I'd known that you had your own sort of music ensemble on YouTube, I would have prepared it before we spoke. Maybe I could still have time to find it and squeeze something onto the radio.
Well, there's a bit on YouTube and it was a video done by a friend of mine, and we're all playing these sort of white suits. It's quite bizarre really, but yeah, we're playing the thing. If you put Slate Rumba, that's what we're playing, the tune we're playing.
Slate Rumba. All right, we'll look it up. But yeah, and best of luck with your book launch in a few weeks' time. And the book itself, it's called Music Stones. It's by Mike Adcock. So if you'd like to get your hands on it, find it on Amazon or the Talk Radio Europe bookshop. Mike, thank you for joining us today. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Good to talk to you. Bye.